Hello, 91.5 listeners. That was Beat It by Fall Out Boy featuring John Mayer. I am Paul, and you are listening to WGLZ West Liberty, where we are passionately vocal. Now, if you are a regular listener, you know I normally go on every Monday at 2 to 3. However, I am joined today with a guest in the studio for a special edition of The Paul Show. In the studio, I have Carlito Gilchrist. He is an independent filmmaker and a former West Liberty University student and graduate. I reached out to him to see if he would like to come into the studio and talk all things movies, since, as you may or may not know, every Monday I discuss the biggest movies of the weekend. So, Carlito, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me be here. This is exciting.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about Marvel movies.
No. I think the public discourse is a little tired of superhero movies.
We're not doing it.
However, before we get into it, did you see The Joker is the first R-rated film to gross over $1 billion worldwide?
Is it?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. That's crazy. Wow. I'm really surprised just because, well, no, I'm not surprised. There's so much hype around that movie. Yeah. I mean, I think it's great because it's like a superhero film, so I guess that's good for that culture. But at the same time, it's like, I thought it was okay. I don't think it's like a movie that really, I wouldn't say it's not a movie that like deserves it, but it's just, I feel like it's just people just go see it for namesake. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does hold a good bit of the conversation.
Like, it's like just very impact like culturally, you know, because of like all the previous Joker, mm-hmm. such like a cinematic character. But it's not a terrible movie. I mean, we've discussed it off air. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just, we both think it's okay.
Yeah, I was just very shocked that there wasn't another R-rated movie to gross over $1 billion worldwide.
That's true. What was the other one like?
The next closest were both of the Deadpool movies at okay. about $800 million each.
Wow.
Which is shocking.
Yeah, good for Todd Phillips.
Yeah, but we said we wouldn't talk comic book movies. So, as I previously stated, you're a filmmaker. So, what first interests you in becoming a filmmaker?
Well, I've always been into movies. I've loved movies ever since I was a kid. I think, like, I realized how much I love movies when I was maybe about 8 or 7. My dad showed me The Matrix at, like, way too young of an age. Which, I mean, you watch it now, it's like, it feels kind of tame compared to a lot of the action films nowadays. But, you know, showing that to an 8-year-old, it is pretty crazy, especially like, you know, the really trippy parts. But then I don't think I realized I wanted to get into filmmaking. It kind of, I started to get the itch in high school when I saw Taxi Driver, surprisingly. I remember, okay. Yeah. And I'd randomly, I think I rented it on demand back when you had to do that, and I remember I watched it, and I remember just thinking like this is, wow, like this is a film, like this isn't a movie, this is a film, like this is so well crafted, and just all the subtle details. And that's when, and I had seen The Departed before and like a few of Scorsese's films, but Taxi Driver would made me realize like, wow, yeah, Scorsese is like a mastermind. I'd want to like strive to be like that.
Was that the first time you looked at a film as a piece of art rather than just a piece of entertainment?
Yeah, definitely. That was like the first time I realized like you can really make something beautiful out of films, not just something that, you know, you just watch for entertainment and forget about. Like, that's one of those movies where you talk about it, you know, and you try to understand like all the characters and the influence that went into the film and everything. Like, it's, I love the I love like one of the stories about, I forget the name of the guy, but the guy who wrote the film, apparently he wrote it, he always had a fully loaded revolver next to the typewriter as he was writing it to kind of give it that edge, like, oh. while he was writing the film. So you could definitely, that definitely is implemented into the filmmaking, I feel.
That's fascinating. I did not know that.
Yeah, that is. That's true. I forget the guy's name. I feel bad, but yeah, I guess he did that.
Now you said with that, like, how that was your first, the Taxi Driver was the first film that really interested you as something that you could do.
Yeah.
Was there a certain aspect of it, or was it all the pieces together? Was it the editing, writing?
I'd say, well, since I've been starting to do it, I want to say it would have been all of it. I think at the time it was more for like the filming, because I loved like hearing stories and reading about, like, oh, like being on set and, you know, like we just did this one scene, like the you talking to me scene, like that was all improv. Like kind of having those moments on set, I was really excited about being able to film that and have those moments happen where it's like this spontaneous, you know, just raw acting like comes out of your performers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get ideas right on the spot as a director, like, you know, let's try it like this. Like, why don't you do it this way? And like that's what really excited me. Now, I would say, like, I definitely like writing a lot. Like, I like coming up with stories and implementing, like, all the ideas I come up with and writing scripts and just like developing characters in my head and just trying to create a whole world. Editing, I'd say I don't like. Yeah. I don't think anyone likes editing. I mean, I think editing, it's very rewarding. Editing is more so than fun because that's when you really see it come to life. That's when you see it come together. But the whole process of editing is just...
It's very tedious.
It's very tedious, and sometimes something's not working, and you just don't understand it. It's a lot of problem solving.
So it really is, for you, just the every aspect of filmmaking, you really like seeing all the pieces come together, be it writing.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think I like the filming a lot because it is fun, just depending on, like, how long your shoot is and stuff, mm-hmm. You know.
Speaking of how long a shoot, before we started recording, you told me you just finished working on an original film. Can you tell me a little bit about the film and the production of it?
I can, yeah. So... I started working on it. I actually took – there's that website called Masterclass, and I took Martin Scorsese's Masterclass, and that's what started inspiring me to, like, want to do it. And I started to come up with ideas. Like, I was like, oh, I definitely want to film in West Virginia, my home state. I kind of had an idea to, like, base it around fishing because I just remember growing up and fishing a lot with my dad, and I thought, like, if that would be an interesting element. And I wanted there to be a shootout or a gunfight. I wanted it to be something. I wanted someone to get shot. Like, I knew that. So I just started throwing some ideas together, and then I just sat down one day. I remember specifically the day. It was 4th of July. I was living in San Francisco, and I was depressed because no one invited me to anything. So I just sat down, and I wrote the script. And then over the next year, I just started, like, tweaking it a little bit here and there. I'd give it to people to read. And then they would, you know, give me feedback. And then finally around maybe like the beginning of this year, I started like actually talking to actors and stuff in the area. And that's kind of like where it all started to come together. I bought a camera, so that's when I started to, you know, try to work with that technology because I was just totally ignorant to how all that worked and all the different tricks and techniques you can do with a camera. So that was a whole learning process altogether.
So real fast, I hope you don't mind me interjecting. So your first time really working with cinematography was also on this film.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, yeah, it definitely was. When I showed the movie to some people, actually one person did tell me, you know, an idea about the cinematography. I just wanted it to look crisp because where we filmed it was just so green. And, you know, he gave me an idea, like, you need to bring it down a bit because, you know, the film is so dramatic and, you know, you kind of want to give it that edge. So he said, like, you know, put a little blue tint to it. So I did that. So it kind of brings down the colors. You really don't realize how much with cinematography, how that tells the story.
Oh, so just bringing in, making it cooler tones as opposed to warmer tones.
So it's like you don't realize, like, how much colors really help tell that story. Because if you're telling, like, a dramatic, eerie story, but everything's, like, so brightly lit, almost like, and, you know, all the colors are too bright, it kind of comes off strange, you know, unless you're going for that. But usually you'd want to bring those down. So I got my – and it's funny how I got my actors together. I'll talk about that. My mom knew this guy – and that she had met at the gym, and apparently he did plays down at the Towngate Theater in downtown. And this guy, I think he was like, his name's James Showalter, and he was like, I think he's around like 70 or so, but like, so like, there wasn't really any part. I only had three actors, but they all had to be younger. But he said, well, I know this one guy named Justin Sawyer. And then I called Justin. He gave me his number. And then right then and there, I casted two people because I needed a father and son character. And so I casted Justin and his son, Isaac. And then maybe 2 weeks later, Justin messaged me and said, hey, I have this friend, Bill. He read the script. He's excited that, like, his character gets to shoot my character in the film. He's interested. So I was like, okay, great. So I cast it right then and there. And so – and when we ended up filming it, it was – we had, like, a couple rehearsals, just, like, one read-through, and then I had one where I just kind of laid out, like, how I was going to shoot it and everything. And then we ended up shooting it all in one day because – one, because of schedules, because they were all busy at the time. I think especially Justin, he was working on a play at the time. And – The weather was so dodgy that whole week. I think it was in May. So so we just had one day to do it. So we literally started at like...
And you, with one day, I assume this is a short film then? Right?
It's a short film. Oh, yeah, I should have said that. It's a short film. It's not like an hour and a half. It's like the final edits maybe like right now it's like 9.5 minutes.
Okay.
But yeah, we shot it all in one day. And I got to tell you, that was the most exhausted I've ever been in my life, just physically and mentally.
With the production itself, especially shooting in just one day, did everything go according to schedule or were there any hiccups that you had to overcome?
Oh, yeah. Well, one definitely was the camera started to run out of battery, which I was worried about. It was fine most of the day, but then like towards the end of the shoot, it was like, and then the lights started to blink and I was like, crap. So it was actually – my mom was on set with me. She helped me. She was just, like, my assistant to, like – so, like, some shots, it's, like, I had to, like, walk backwards and everything. So it was, like, just – I just had her stand behind me so I didn't fall. Because everywhere we walked, you could, like, trip over, like, twigs and leaves and bushes and stuff. So I ended up having to halt shooting for, like, a couple hours. I had to drive back to my house, charge the battery enough so we could finish it, drive back out there. And I felt so bad, so we ended up getting pizza for everyone. So I'm like, well, they got to be hungry. Because the actors were gracious enough just to, like, sit out there and chill with all the equipment. And we ended up getting back and got pizza. And then I didn't realize, but my one actor, Justin, he can't have any tomato products. So he couldn't eat any pizza.
Well, I guess that's not a major production hiccup then. That's more on him.
It's more on him, yeah.
Now, one thing... you didn't mention so far. I don't know if you're – are you able to tell us the name of this production?
Yes. It's called Fishing Lesson.
Fishing Lesson. Okay. I like it. Now that you have completed post-production on it, what are your plans to do with Fishing Lesson?
So actually recently, you know, like a couple days ago, I sent it to some festivals. I didn't realize this, but there is this – this is how I just learn things as I go. but there's this – website called Film Freeway. I don't know if you've heard of it, but basically you make – it's almost like a Facebook – it's like a social media for filmmakers where you basically make a profile and you just post your films up there.
Hmm.
And then it's almost like an Amazon, like a shopping website where you go through and you just find festivals and they just tell you if – because there's so many film festivals nowadays, it's hard to just track down one. And I thought – I was like, this is a great tool. They should have this for, say, like comic book writers because trying to like submit to comic book companies is like a nightmare. So I'm like, this would be great for that. But basically, you just click on what film festivals are like. You can submit now. Click on them. And, of course, you have to pay a fee. Sometimes, depending on the deadlines, it's like, oh, you got a last deadline. Sometimes last deadline is like $80. But if you get in there early deadline, maybe like $30. And you basically just click whatever you want to submit to, and you just pay, and then just sends it all to them. And it updates you as, you know, like, so right now, all the films are – my film's like in consideration for all of them. So it's like it, I just sent it and waiting to watch it.
And
waiting
I
to
just see wait
they,
and see.
Wait and see what they do with it.
Okay, so is there – I got one more question before we throw to a break to music. Is there anywhere where any of my listeners can currently view Fishing Lesson, or are there plans in the future to put it up in a public setting like YouTube or Vimeo?
Yeah, actually, you can. Actually, I don't know if – I'd have to double-check on that, but you can because if you go to Film Freeway, and I think if you look up my profile, Carlito Gilchrist, I think it's up there. I'd have to double-check on another – laptop because I can watch it, but I don't know if it's under – I tried to change it to where it was public, so I don't know if anyone can watch it, but I think you might.
Okay. Well, when you find that out, we don't have to figure this out right
yeah.
now. But when Carlito does figure that out, I will keep you listeners posted. Either I'll update it on the WGLZ website, or I will mention it in one of my shows coming up. All right. But for right now, we are going to go back to the music just for a little bit. So we are going to throw to one of Carlito's favorite bands. And that is System of a Down with BYOB. All right, welcome back. We are still here in the studio with Carlito. That was Teeth by 5 Seconds of Summer. I do want to apologize for a moment earlier. I said we were throwing to System of a Down, and for some reason, did not allow that song to play in our system. That's why we went to Live in La Vida Loca, which is basically the same thing. All right, so since we are back in the studio, I wanted to talk with Carlito. As you may or may not know, you listeners out there, every week I do a show where I discuss the latest movie of the weekend, one of the biggest ones to come out. And at the end of my quick little review and discussion, I like to give a recommendation of whether or not I think you should see that movie. Now, since I have a filmmaker in the studio, I thought it would be fun to talk to him about some of his favorite movies to have come out over this past year. So, Carlito, is there any movie that stands out from 2019 that you think is a must-see movie?
Captain Marvel. No, I'm just kidding. Definitely. So the one I saw recently, The Lighthouse. Did you talk about that?
I did not. I actually did not get the opportunity to see The Lighthouse.
Okay. Yeah, that was incredible. I can't remember the filmmaker's name. I remember it, and then it like goes for me. He's not one of those like.
It's an A24 film. Correct?
It's A24. But it's the same guy who made The Witch, if you liked that movie. It was like a horror film that came out like 4 years ago, but this is completely different. I just saw like this small theater, I think in like Denver, and it was incredible. I mean, you want to talk – it was basically like a throwback movie. Like it felt like a movie that was filmed back in like the 1910s, and apparently they actually got like equipment from those days to film it with. And
the 1910s.
Maybe not the 1910s, but
we're throwing it all the way back to Birth of a Nation.
Yeah, but it really felt like that because the movie, like, it was in the aspect ratio. It was basically just like a square. Like,
the 4.1?
Yeah, it didn't even fill up the whole screen. And I saw it in a small theater. It was basically like a small square almost. Like, it still went top to bottom, but the sides didn't fill out. It was just great. Like, the story and like very intriguing and like. Obviously very metaphorical, but the performances are hilarious.
That's starring Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe, yeah. Oh, my gosh. That one's great. I'd recommend that one.
So you would say Lighthouse is probably your favorite 2019 film?
That or The Last Black Man in San Francisco. One of those two movies. Last Black Man in San Francisco, I was wanting to see that because I lived in San Francisco for a while, so I've been wanting to see that. That was a beautiful film. And apparently it was from a Kickstarter.
Oh, so it was one of the crowdfunded films.
It was crowdfunded, and it took like 5 years to get it fully funded.
Which that's a whole other conversation is the how crowdfunding films are becoming more and more prevalent. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing, especially with like coming out next year, is Bill and Ted 3. The next
is that
film.
Crowdfunded?
I believe it started as a crowdfunding thing, then it actually got large producers attached. But that's how many of them work started out crowdfunded to get the initial, say, million or so towards the production, and then producers come in. But
that's amazing.
Was it The Last Black Man in San Francisco?
In San Francisco, yeah. It was written by the guy who stars in it. Co-wrote the film because he's a San Francisco native. It's basically a movie that's all about. It's basically a love letter to the city, but how the city has changed. Whereas, you know, we have the tech companies that are all over there now. So now it's like there's so much poverty and homeless because people can't afford to live there, and how the city's changed in that respect that it's just not the same at all. So it basically hits on all those points, and you learn about like the history of like the downtown San Francisco. And there's even like there's this great joke. I'm not going to spoil the movie, but there's just this great joke. They just like this throwaway line at one point where they say like, oh, they dump so much pollution in the San Francisco Bay that like the fish are mutated. You know, you think it's just like this throwaway line. Well, then there's a part where one of the characters is literally fishing. He reels a fish out of the water, and when it lands on the dock, it has like two eyes on one side, like it's mutated.
Oh, that's funny.
It was so funny. But it's a beautiful film, so I definitely recommend that one.
Okay. Now, this is probably a much harder question, but since we are also closing out the decade, not just the year, the decade is coming to a close. I thought it might be kind of fun. What movies in the last 10 years seem to really stand out, and what do you think of any of those movies are we going to look back on, you know, 10, 20, even 30 years from now and think that was a defining movie of the 2010s?
Oh, wow, that's a hard one.
Tough question, yes.
Yeah. You know, one I always go to, and I'm sure people will definitely agree with me, Mad Max Fury Road,
yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, that's not a movie, that's not a thinking movie. It all kind of spells it out for you. The plot's so simple. And the fact that it was made by George Miller, who's like was like 70 when it was made, it went through so much production hell to like get made, and considering that like he's a 70-year-old man who had spent the last 2 decades making kids movies, like he made the Babe movies and then the Happy Feet movies, and then he's like, you know what, I want to make another Mad Max movie, because he had made the original films, and that it was so practical. They had built all those cars. Every performance in it is amazing.
I had heard, too, the computer-generated images was really only to erase some of the safety measures for some of the actors, as well as to enhance the landscape a little bit. Pretty much everything else was filmed.
Yeah, pretty much. Because if you watch the movie, like, there's a lot of these cars, like, actually driving through, like, these tight corners of, like, hills and ridges and mountainsides and stuff, which obviously you wouldn't actually do that because that's extremely dangerous. So most of that was done on flat land, but they enhanced the landscape. But that is actually cars driving and running into each other mostly, and actors flying around on wires and, like, all this crazy stuff happening. And, I mean, it was just – it's incredible. Like, it's just – it's amazing that, like, we have so many action films that come out, even, like, in those days, where it just seemed like there was nothing to them. It was not so much sustenance. Like, you think of, like, the Fast and Furious movies. It's just like, oh, they just make these – they just pop these movies every few years, and there's not much to them. But then you have, like, this movie like Mad Max, who comes in, and it's like this old man, George Miller, is just like, let me show you how it's really done. Let me show you. You know, that just stands – I don't know. I could watch that movie 10 times a year. I mean, if you want to say the decade, that's definitely one that
that's
I
up
would
there.
Always go back to.
Now, is there any others that is definitely going to stand out, especially with how it seems the – it almost seems like we are moving into a renaissance of the action film with superhero films. Is there any other movies that are not action-oriented?
Not action.
That you think are really going to last from this decade? For example, I think, and even though it has maybe gone down in the public discourse a little bit, but is still fairly popular, I personally would say something along the lines of La La Land in terms of a kind of unique film that did well.
Yeah.
However, I think a lot of its infamy is now coming from that Oscars fiasco where it briefly won the Best Picture.
Oh, my gosh. That was the most funny thing I ever seen on live television.
but is there any other films sort of in that vein or something? Or do you really think action is going to define this decade when it comes to films?
No, I definitely don't think that. I mean, I think when we look back at this decade, a lot of people are going to say, like, superhero films really took it over. But if you erase that and action films... So you've had a lot of action films, but Mad Max, I feel like, just kind of trumps over that. If you want to say any other films, oof.
Is there any, like, real dramatic pieces or...
There is one that I've seen a few times. See, like, nowadays with, like, streaming services, I never buy movies anymore. But I'll only buy a movie if I love it. And this movie I bought because I love was Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, okay.
Did you see that?
You bought that? Okay. the reason I paused there, in case you were unaware, he just stated, you know, with all the streaming services, you don't need to buy these movies. Manchester by the Sea is an Amazon Studios film, so it is made to be streamed,
right.
Which I think that is fascinating that you bought a physical copy.
That I bought a physical copy of it because I loved it so much. Yeah.
Okay.
Did you see it?
I actually did not see that movie. That was one of the few I did not catch from that Oscars season.
That was – I don't remember which year that came out, but that was –
That would have been the 2016 Oscars, so that was up against La La Land.
Was it up against La La Land? Okay. Yeah, that was definitely – that was one of those years where I made it my mission to watch all the movies, and that one I hadn't seen, so I just sat down and watched it maybe like a couple nights before the Oscars, and – I was just blown away by just just the performances, just how simple the movie was, but then heart-wrenching. I mean, heart-wrenching movie. Mm-hmm. But somehow it still makes you laugh at the same time. I'd have to say, if I had to choose any, that would definitely be one.
Okay. And yeah. one final question about films of the decade.
Yeah.
Is there any hidden gem kind of films that you feel came out this decade that not enough people saw or didn't get talked about enough?
Yes.
What's that?
I'm blanking on the name for a moment. I always forget it. It was a science fiction movie that came out with Natalie Portman.
Annihilation. That is one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah, no one talked about it.
Didn't get nominated for a single Oscar.
It didn't get nominated for anything. It was, and I mean, I'm not a guy who gets political, but you say something like comes out like Ghostbusters, where everyone's making a big deal about like, oh, it's an all-female cast, and everyone gets all hung up on that. But then it's like Annihilation was kind of the same thing.
All female. Great cast.
Great casting, but like no one made a big deal about. Well, no one talked about it, but it wasn't one of those movies that just like.
It was an Alex Garland film too, who most famously did yeah, Ex Machina.
Yeah, so it wasn't like It wasn't like one of those studio things where they had to like throw in everyone's face. We did an all female cast, it was amazing. Like, you know, it's revolutionary. It's like, no, they've done all female cast before. Like Ghostbusters wasn't special. Like this movie, just it was like it's all women. They're all amazing. They all just have really awesome jobs, and it's like the most craziest, mind-bending sci-fi film I think I may have ever seen. It was like one of the, I can only speak of like a few movies where you sit through the credits because you can't move. Mm-hmm. Like that was definitely one of those movies. And there's a scene, I'm not going to reveal it, but there is a scene in that movie where I was so legitimately terrified because, you know, watching it in a dark theater, I think I was by myself. Again, no one saw this movie. But there is a scene where I was just so terrified. Like, I never get scared because I know I'm in a theater, but I was legit, like, I thought I was going to freak out. It just accomplished so many things. And it has so much to say about just life in general. I don't want to give too much away about the movie, but yeah, if you want to go see a hidden gem, check out that. Annihilation.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to mention at a later date, a little closer to the end of the year, on one of my shows, I'm planning on doing a top 10 films of decade and year and stuff, and that is likely going to make it onto my list for top 10 of the decade. One of my favorite movies of all time. But with that about brings this little conversation to a close. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Carlito, or are you ready to get out of here?
Yeah, he's been holding me hostage here. No, that's about it. Just, you know, I think one thing I want to say is, like, you know, I know we have all these streaming services and stuff now, and there's, like, smaller movies that may come to theaters and everything, but, like, you know, go see a good movie, you know? Like, don't wait for these next Marvel superhero movies. Like, I know they're great or whatever, but, you know, there's still quality, great filmmakers out there that are really busting their butt to make great films, and I think we should take the time to, like, appreciate them, you know?
Yeah.
So if you see a trailer for a weird movie, don't just flack it right away. Go out and check it out. You know, you never know. You might find a new thing you like. I don't know.
There we go. I feel like that's a great way to end, great note to end on. Carlito, I want to thank you again for coming into the studio and having this conversation with me.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, and I want to thank you, listeners, for sticking with us. That is pretty much it, so I'm going to send you back to the music. Once again, thank you for listening to 91.5 WGLZ West Liberty, where we are passionately vocal. Here is Death of a Bachelor by Panic at the Disco.